Chapter 5. It was necessary for Bob Arctor to be out of his house for a period of time in order that it be properly, which meant unerringly, bugged, phone included, even though the phone lines were tapped elsewhere. Usually, the practice consisted of observing the house involved until everyone was seen to leave it in such a fashion as to suggest that they were not going to return soon. The authorities sometimes had to wait for days or even several weeks. Finally, if nothing else worked, a pretext was arranged. The residents were informed that a fumigator or some such shuck personality was going to be coming in for a whole afternoon and everybody had to get lost until, say, 6 p.m. But in this case, the suspect Robert Arctor obligingly left his house, taking his two roommates with him, to go check out a cephalochromoscope they could use on loan until Barris had his working again. The three of them were seen to drive off in Arctor's car, looking serious and determined. Then, later on, at a convenient point, which was a payphone at a gas station, using the audio grid of his scramble suit, Fred called in to report that definitely nobody would be home the rest of that day. He'd overheard the three men deciding to cruise all the way down to San Diego in search of a cheap, ripped-off cephscope that some dude had for sale for around $50, a smack freak price. At that price, it was worth a long drive and all the time. Also, this gave the authorities the opportunity to do a little illegal searching above and beyond what their undercover people did when no one was looking. They got to pull out bureau drawers to see what was taped to the backs. They got to pull apart pole lamps to see if hundreds of tabs sprang out. They got to look down inside toilet bowls to see what sort of little packets and toilet paper were lodged out of sight where the running water would automatically flush them. They got to look in the freezer compartment of the refrigerator to see if any of the packages of frozen peas and beans actually contained frozen dope, slyly mismarked. Meanwhile, the complicated holo scanners were mounted, with officers seating themselves in various places to test the scanners out, the same with the audio ones. But the video part was more important and took more time. And of course, the scanner should never be visible. It took skill to so mount them. A number of locations had to be tried. The technicians who did this got paid well, because if they screwed up and a holo scanner got detected later on by an occupant of the premises, then the occupants, all of them, would know they had been penetrated and were under scrutiny and cool their activities. And in addition, they would sometimes tear off the whole scanning system and sell it. It had proven difficult in the courts, Bob Arctor reflected as he drove along the San Diego freeway south, to get convictions on theft and sale of electronic detection devices illegally installed in someone's residence. The police could only tack the bust on somewhere else, under another statute violation. However, the pushers, in an analogous situation, reacted directly. He recalled a case in which a heroin dealer, out to burn a chick, had planted two packets of heroin in the handle of her iron, then phoned in an anonymous tip on her to We Tip. Before the tip could be acted on, the chick found the heroin, but instead of flushing it, she had sold it. The police came, found nothing. They made a voice print on the phone tip and arrested the pusher for giving false information to the authorities. While out on bail, the pusher visited the chick late one night and beat her almost to death. When caught and asked why he'd put out one of her eyes and broken both her arms and several ribs, he explained that the chick had come across two packets of high-grade heroin belonging to him, sold them for a good profit, and not cut him in. Such, Arctor reflected, went the pusher mentality.